Hi, I'm Doug Gordon, and this is Beta. What exactly is happiness? According to Charles M. Schulz's beloved Peanuts comic strip, there are a number of different ways to define happiness. For example, happiness is a warm puppy. But happiness is also two kinds of ice cream. However we define happiness, it's safe to say that we're all searching for it. And comedian Paula Poundstone is no exception. But Paula being Paula, she decided to search for it in a rather unusual way. A totally unscientific way. Paula chronicles her journey in a book called The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness. So how does she define happiness?
Sadly, it's very unromantic. It's a biochemical process.
Yeah.
And I say that as the author of The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness. But it is. It's all the things that your parents told you. That's the other thing I that's upsetting about it. Get some exercise. Go outside, socialize, and pitch in and help. Those are probably the main things.
If it is indeed a biochemical process, which I believe you are right, then why did you want to search for happiness in a totally unscientific way?
I don't think I gathered that yet. So I guess I sort of learned it as I went along. But the other thing is, as a writer, I knew that the experiments themselves would be good playgrounds for writing jokes.
Oh, yeah.
And then the other thing, I knew that the real question for me was certainly not what do I enjoy doing, because I have a handle on what I enjoy doing. The real question was, what could I do that would leave me with a bounce, you know, so that when I return to my regular life of raising a house full of kids and animals and being a stand-up comic and just being stuck being me 24 hours a day, you know, that I had some residual good feeling to carry me through the challenges of my regular life. And therefore, I knew, before I even began writing, that the sort of crux of the book would be where I checked back in and saw how my regular life was going. What I didn't know is that it would take me 7 years to write. Mm. And there were lots of surprises to me as a writer, but it ended up being this, in addition to the experiments themselves, this 7-year chronology of, you know, basically my kids growing up and leaving.
Yeah, yeah, that's an interesting part, and that adds this layer of kind of sadness to the whole book, which is very intriguing. Adds a whole nother level there. You got some pathos going in there. So you decided to take the immersion journalism approach in your Totally Unscientific Study. You followed in the footsteps of such immersive journalists as George Plimpton, Ted Conover, and more recently A.J. Jacobs. Why did you want to take this approach?
Well, this is a terrible declaration of ignorance, but one of the things that I thought when I first came up with the idea was that the publisher would be willing to pay for the experiments.
Mm.
Now, I haven't drank for, I don't know, 16 years or so, but I must have had some sort of, you know, residual high when I came up with that idea.
Yeah.
Because I had this idea that, you know, I would get the chance to do these potentially, you know, happiness rewarding things, and someone else would pay for it, which I must say would have doubled the happiness for sure.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you can buy happiness, it seems. The first experiment you undertook was the Get Fit experiment, and that seems like a perfectly logical place to start because there's a lot of scientific evidence indicating that exercise does make us happy. But me, being the reckless pessimist that I am, I have to wonder if all of this research is just a bunch of junk science paid for by the gymnasium industrial complex. What do you think?
The truth is, if because I really did go in not knowing.
Yeah.
If I had realized the success that I would achieve in the happiness department from the Get Fit experiment, I would have put it later in the book.
Mm.
Because, you know, it'd be great to sort of build too. But
sure.
I really did go in naively, and it didn't occur to me right away. I mean, I really was experimenting. What I would do is, in the case of that experiment, there's a Taekwondo self-defense studio about 6 or 7 blocks from my house. And I have no passion, by the way, for Taekwondo or self-defense. The reason I chose that studio was it's the closest one to my house. And although I wanted to get fit, I didn't want to have to walk that far to do it.
Of course not.
So I went to the guy I signed up for as many classes as I could in, you know, around my schedule, which was, you know, probably, it varied from week to week, but it was, I'd say, 3, 4, 5 a week, depending on the week. And I just sort of, you know, when I would come home from his studio, I would sit down with a notebook and write my field notes.
Yeah, right.
And then so one day I'm walking down the alley behind my house carrying about 30 pounds, I think, of cat waste and litter in a trash bag.
Yeah.
And I'm walking to the trash cans down the alley. And all of a sudden it dawned on me that I felt good. I mean, it just felt good. And I thought to myself, okay, it has to be working out because I have carried huge bags of animal waste down this alley many, many, many times. And I don't ever recall feeling like, hey, this is great. I'm hoping it's not the cat waste because, whew.
Yeah.
I don't want that to be the source of happiness.
No, I don't think any of us do. So the Get Fit experiment did bring you closer to happiness.
Yeah, I think it really did. I mean, I describe it in the book, and I would stand by that description, as that I felt, sometimes it felt, not during the workout, by the way. The workouts themselves were grueling. I was often about to cry or throw up very hard, except for I enjoyed the company of the guy that was the trainer. But when I wasn't doing that, when I was just experiencing, as I said, this sort of residual feeling that I got from it, I remember, and I recorded in the book, feeling like when I breathed in, it felt like I was breathing in possibility.
That's great. You say that the human species has never come up with a standard form of measurement for happiness and that this could have something to do with why we have so much trouble figuring out how happy we are. Do you have any ideas about what we could call units of measurement for happiness?
I did come up because I realized that when I went to write this, you know, like I had to quantify it somehow.
Yes.
In order to express, you know, whether or not the thing was giving me happiness or at what point it did. So I came up with, let's see, HEPs of happiness are sort of a small, I don't know what that word is, you know.
Unit of measurement?
Unit of measurement.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And four HEPs would complete a Baloo of happiness. And a Baloo of happiness is substantial.
Yeah. Where did you get those names from?
These are some of my cats.
Yeah. So extrapolating that, I wonder if what would you call the happiest you've ever been? Would we use your cat ShamWow's name like and say, this is the ShamWowiest day of my life? What do you think?
You know, ShamWow has not yet ascended in the pride high enough to have a unit of happiness measure named after her.
Yeah, and then, of course, if some of the countries don't like the names you've come up with, and I don't see how you could not like them, but if they didn't, they could just come up with their own alternative happiness measurement system, like the metric system, right?
Well, that's true. That didn't mess everybody up badly enough.
No.
I think we have to have cohesion. Plus, I just love the idea of hearing. You know how sometimes there'll be a word that's like, it's not just an English word, it's an American word.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll hear somebody speak in another language, but there is no translation for that word. And so it'll be like, blah, 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 ShamWow, blah, 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 blah,
yeah,
blah,
yeah.
I love that. Yeah. So I love the idea of a HEP and a Baloo being a universal term.
Yeah, I think it's great. We got to make that happen somehow. So which one of your happiness experiments, which one of the 13 taught you the most about happiness?
Well, I guess I'm going to come at this from the reverse.
Sure.
I think, just like when I started out as a comic, I used to watch other comics. And if somebody was really good, honestly, I couldn't tell what they were doing.
Mm. They made it so seem so effortless, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And it was theirs anyways.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't mean the exact words, but whereas if I watch someone who wasn't good or who that particular performance I saw wasn't good, then I really learned something. And I guess in using that same very negative approach, which is sort of my hallmark, the Get Wired experiment ended up being really, really important in this book. Everybody kept saying to me, oh my gosh, what do you mean you don't use a computer? Oh, if you use it, you'd be so, you are going to love computers because it's going to make you so, so much happier. And the one that we had at the house, you know, the kids used it for school stuff and they played on it when they were little. And so I believed that idea. So, in fact, so much so that when I began the Get Wired experiment, I did it with real zeal. I was very excited mm-hmm. about it. I went out, I bought a laptop. I got somebody, you know, some tech teachy guy to come teach me how to do some stuff on it. And I really had every hope and expectation of this improving my life and my level of happiness exponentially. And what's interesting is, as I said, I went through this process where I would take notes. You know, I did the things. I started making videos to post on YouTube. I had the goofy Facebook account. Yeah. I started Twitter. You know, all the stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
The stuff, the email, the stuff that everybody's so excited about. Again, with every expectation of this making me happy. And then I would take notes on, you know, using it. Just and how life was going, you know, raising the kids and animals, just the same as I'd done with the other experiments. When I went to do the rewrite on the book, some of those chapters I had not looked at since I wrote it. Mm-hmm. And given that it took 7 years to write the book, by the time I went to do the rewrite on the book, that I'd been using a computer for a while at that point. And so I send the... You know, I send everything off to the editor and it comes back. And what's really funny was, you know, she would circle words that I reused too much.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I didn't notice it at the time because I was forcing myself to just put the pen to the page. Just write it. Just write it and get through it and then deal with, you know, making it correct later. You would not believe how many times the words lonely and tired were circled.
Wow.
And I hadn't written the chapter. I had no intention of damning technology. I really looked forward to it. I really thought that I was, you know, on the outside looking in because everybody else was doing this stuff. And the other thing that happens unplanned and unheralded and unwelcome in the book is that I end up chronicling my son's descent into electronics addiction, which is a real thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A very serious thing in our kids in particular. I mean, it's not good for any of us, but for children with developing brains, it's a disastrous combination. And so it was just really fascinating by the time I got to the end of writing it all, and then I'm reading it, and I'm going, wow, I didn't realize what I had chronicled when I chronicled it. But I really did go from being almost entirely a blank slate with computer technology. I mean, it was an experiment that almost nobody else has done,
yeah.
Which is take someone who hasn't touched it, really, and now sort of immerse yourself in it and see how you feel. And the answer is not good.
Yeah. So is it possible that learning to use a computer, was that the experiment that made you the most unhappy?
I would say, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was only rivaled by the process of getting organized. Not actually feeling organized felt great. When on the rare occasion when I had that feeling. But one of my chapters was, in fact, two of my chapters, I did the Get Organized chapter part one and the Get Organized chapter part two.
Yeah.
And that was grueling. Once I had gotten through it, it does feel good, actually. It feels really good. But the process is really depressing.
Yeah, it's some real tough sledding. So what was the most surprising thing you learned about happiness while writing this book and undertaking all these experiments? Can you point to one thing?
I don't know. I mean, I think this fact that it really is this biochemical process and how much of it has little to do with the circumstances of one's life. And now I'm saying that as a fairly privileged person, I live a pretty comfortable life. Mm-hmm. And so maybe if I was in another circumstance, then this wouldn't be this way. In the process of writing the Get Fit experiment, one of my best friends died, and my dog died, and I went to visit injured service people at Walter Reed.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those were, they were points where you would, under normal circumstances in my life, those are things that would have laid me pretty low. And it's not that I didn't feel, you know, it's not like my best friend died and I felt pretty good. I felt sad, but I didn't feel overwhelmed. Mm. I didn't feel like I would never stand up again or that I was sinking. I could still see and feel a future, but in the moment it was sad, which is very different from how I often feel. I heard a great thing the other day. I was at a conference in Boston on screens and the developing brain.
Mm-hmm.
I heard this thing that I had never heard before, and it was so impactful to me. Hope requires imagination. And I thought that was so stunning. So you have to develop imagination in order to feel hopeful. And in the case of the Get Fit experiment, it definitely left one with a hopeful feeling. So that as one lives one life like a bowling pin, you know, as things come at you, you know, you're not necessarily knocked down by them.
Mm, that's a good way of putting it. Final question, Paula. Are you now more capable of experiencing happiness? Are you more happy at times?
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely using the results. Yeah, I'd be a fool not to, I think. You know, it's funny when we were in the editing process, the editor kept saying to me, I don't think she really understood entirely what I was doing. She said, the readers won't understand why you stopped working out if it made you feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to her, for science, because you have to isolate the variables.
Yeah.
The only two things that I didn't stop doing when I finished with that chapter, in order to go on to the next one, where I continued to use the silly, stupid computer, even though clearly it wasn't making me happy.
No.
And the other thing is when I started volunteering at a nursing home, I never stopped. I've been there for a couple of years now because I had what I needed for the purposes of writing after a couple of months, but it just didn't feel right to go like, okay, got what I need. See ya.
Yeah, yeah.
I have stayed there. But I just, months ago went back to working out, and I have to say, it's good just like it was the first time.
Paula Poundstone is a comedian and the author of the totally unscientific study of the search for human happiness.